In the spiritual realm, demons are beings capable of taking possession of a human body, using it to achieve their goals. This total domination is referred to as demonic possession. During his time on earth, Jesus confronted many of these spiritual creatures, demonstrating his supremacy and messianic authority in a remarkable way. In an impressive episode, at dusk, several people tormented by demons were brought to Jesus. With just one word, he cast out these evil spirits and healed all the sick people present, thus reaffirming his divine power. And when evening came, they brought to him many who were possessed with demons, and he cast out the spirits with his word and healed all who were sick. Matthew 8 verse 16. A significant moment took place in the town of Gadara, where Jesus encountered a demon-possessed man. Despite the variations in the names of the region in the scriptures, Gerasa, Gergesa, or Gadara, this small village near the lake was a witness to Christ's saving power. Gadara, one of the prominent cities of the Decapolis, stood majestically 6 miles southeast of the southern end of the lake, and was the scene of a truly remarkable event. It seems that this incident took place in the vicinity of both cities, witnessing a transcendental encounter. As narrated by Luke, the possessed man went out to meet Jesus and his disciples as soon as they reached the shore. Although Luke and Mark mention only one of the two people possessed by demons, this singular man, described in Luke 8 verses 27 and 28, had been tormented by evil spirits for a long time. And when he was come down to earth, there met him out of the city a man who had been possessed with demons for a long time, and was neither clothed nor dwelt in any house but in the tombs. And when he saw Jesus, he fell down before him, crying out and saying with a loud voice, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you not to torment me." Stripped of his clothes and dwelling among the tombs, he recognized the presence of Jesus, prostrating himself before him and crying out in a loud voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you not to torment me." This intense dialogue between the stricken man and the Savior reveals the magnitude of the divine power about to be manifested in that unique place. The careful Dr. Lucas meticulously pointed out the clear symptoms of demonic possession in the subject. These included a disregard for his own self-esteem, demonstrated by his nudity, as well as a tendency to withdraw socially, preferring places considered unclean. In addition, there was a notable acceptance of Jesus as the Savior, the ability to control his speech, powerful vocal expressions, and superhuman strength. This individual was unmistakably under the dominion of spiritual entities, contrary to the teachings of Jesus and God. The demons present in him admitted Jesus's holiness, not as a gesture of praise, but as a desperate plea for compassion before him, identifying him as a judge. This request was an attempt to escape the imminent suffering of being prematurely cast into hell. At this moment of great tension, the spiritual confrontation between the sacred and the profane reached its climax, laying the foundations for the next divine intervention. This unfortunate individual sought refuge among the tombs, dominated by an impure spirit, as if he were perpetually immersed in a funeral spectacle, alien to human society and residing among the dead. However, this wasn't Jesus's first encounter with demons, as shown earlier in the case of Mary, also known as Magdalene, and also certain women who had been healed of evil spirits and infirmities. Mary, called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had gone out. Luke 8, verse 2. Mary, a striking example, was possessed by a demon until Jesus freed her. Despite speculation about her previous life, the Bible does not explicitly confirm her alleged immoral practices. In the episode in Gadara, Jesus commanded the unclean spirit to leave the possessed man, whose power was so overwhelming that it had led him to break chains and wander the deserts. The spirit's response, identifying itself as Legion, indicated the presence of many demons. Begging not to be sent into the abyss, they were allowed to enter a herd of pigs nearby, highlighting the complexity of the spiritual conflict. This event, like the meeting in Gadara, underscores Jesus' unshakable dominance over the forces of darkness, demonstrating his supreme authority over the spirit world. The scriptures mention four places destined for ungodly souls and rebellious spirits after death, identified as areas of intense suffering. Tartarus is one of these places, notorious for holding certain angels in chains until Judgment Day arrives. The presence of Tartarus in the New Testament is scarce, being explicitly mentioned only once in its original Greek form in 2 Peter 2, verse 4. This verse reports that God did not show mercy to the angels who sinned, confining them in Tartarus and keeping them in gloomy dungeons until the moment of judgment. For if God did not forgive the angels who sinned, but cast them into hell and delivered them into chains of darkness, they were reserved for the judgment. In the various translations, Tartarus is often translated as hell or abyss, emphasizing its gloomy aspect and the end destined for those who oppose the order established by God. Such references shed light on the spiritual dimensions and the future judgment of those who stray from the principles of virtue, underlining God's perennial justice and the gravity of his commands. Another account in the Bible that deals with the fall of angels is found in Genesis 6, from verses 1 to 4. As mentioned by Jude in verse 6, some angels abandoned their heavenly abode and were punished by God, who cast them into Tartarus, where they remain enveloped in pits of darkness until the moment of judgment. Luke 8, verse 31, highlights the devil's great apprehension about being thrown into Tartarus, and they begged him not to send them into the abyss. When Peter mentions Tartarus, he does so in the context of condemning false teachers. Those who deliberately spread heresy within the church will one day face the fate of Tartarus, parallel to the fallen angels responsible for spreading sin. While awaiting the day of judgment, these individuals remain captive, bound by the chains of Tartarus, a solemn reminder of the fate that awaits transgressors who defy divine design. In the sacred texts, a place known as Hades is mentioned, called Sheol in Hebrew, often translated as hell or tomb. After Jesus' death, he descended into Hades, as recorded in the sacred records. Peter states that while he was there, he preached to the trapped souls. Paul's letter to the Ephesians relates that, on ascending to heaven, Christ set these captives free, thus fulfilling the prophecy of Isaiah 61, which promised the release of prisoners and the opening of prison doors to captives. The word translated as deep is the Greek term abyss, which in other parts of the New Testament is often translated as bottomless pit. This episode reveals the redemptive compassion of Christ, who not only descended into Hades to preach, but also freed those who were captives, inaugurating a new path of hope and spiritual freedom for those who follow him. It is crucial to note that these spiritual beings plead with Jesus, begging him not to send them into the abyss at that moment. Aware that the inevitable moment of being thrown into the abyss is approaching, they seek even greater concessions, an intriguing dynamic, especially considering that Jesus grants them. At the time of the meeting in Gadara, he didn't order them, "Don't torment us, don't send us into the abyss." At that particular moment, Jesus chose not to send them into the abyss. However, their time will come, especially when Satan is arrested. In this future unfolding, these evil spirits will be released, instigating a rebellion against God and the reign of Jesus Christ in the hearts of ungodly men. They will then face their final fate by being cast into the place that houses the beast and the false prophet. This outcome reveals Jesus' sovereignty over the forces of darkness and the justice that awaits those who oppose his lordship. In Gadara, the majority of the inhabitants were non-Jews. Confronting the demons that tormented the man, Jesus instructed them to leave the body, giving the victim relief from his anguish. Determined to reveal the extent of the evil power that possessed the man, Jesus asked him to reveal his name. The demons reluctantly expressed their preference for inhabiting the bodies of living beings, because they knew they would be judged and punished. Faced with imminent expulsion from the human body, they asked to be allowed to enter animals, including pigs. Jesus, in his compassion, granted their request, but ultimately the demons were responsible for their actions, resulting in the loss of the lives of the pigs, who rushed uncontrollably into the steep lake and drowned. The incident provided a dramatic and visual confirmation of Jesus's power over demons, highlighting his authority to free the oppressed from the dominion of darkness. And when the demons had gone out of the man, they entered the pigs, and the herd rushed over a cliff into the lake and drowned. Luke 8, verse 33. This remarkable event not only demonstrated divine intervention, but also highlighted the spiritual responsibility that falls on those who choose to follow paths contrary to God's will. Jesus valued the life of a single human being incomparably more than the lives of 2,000 pigs. However, the local people were more concerned about their fields and, fearful of what might happen, urged Jesus to leave the area immediately. They went out to see what had happened and came to Jesus. Then they found the man from whom the demons had come out, clothed and in his right mind, sitting at Jesus' feet, and they were afraid. Those who had seen him also told them how the demon-possessed man had been saved, and all the people of the land of the Gadarenes around begged him to depart from them, for they were filled with great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. Luke 8, verses 35 to 37. As they witnessed the transformation of the previously possessed man, who was now sitting at Jesus' feet, clothed and in his right mind, the people became fearful. However, instead of celebrating the man's liberation, the crowd in and around Gadara begged Jesus to leave, overwhelmed by great fear. This episode reveals a sad reality, where people showed more concern for the well-being of the pigs than for the liberation and health of the previously possessed man. The preference for material possessions over the value of human life underscores the need for a more compassionate perspective centered on spiritual priorities. Despite pleading with Jesus to leave them alone, the man who had previously been dominated by demons and was now set free had a different request. He begged Jesus to allow him to stay with him. However, Jesus instructed him to return to his own home, thus highlighting the remarkable transformation that God had wrought in his life. While fulfilling his responsibilities, he spread the word throughout the city about the wonders Jesus had worked in his life. When Jesus returned to Capernaum from the other side of the lake, he was greeted with great joy by the people who were waiting anxiously for him. This contrast highlights a striking distinction. While in Gadara they were asking him to leave, in Capernaum, the crowd was waiting expectantly for him. This warm welcome suggests that the man who had previously been dominated may not have been a native of Gadara. For when he was ordered to proclaim God's mercy among his acquaintances, he did so in the Decapolis as recorded by Mark. Satan and his allies remain committed to disrupting the divine work and deceiving everyone they can. And no wonder, for Satan himself is transfigured into an angel of light. It is no small thing, then, that his ministers should be transformed into ministers of righteousness, the end of whom will be according to their works. 2 Corinthians 11, verses 14 and 15. The scriptures warn us that Satan, who masquerades as an angel of light, is a master in the art of deception, and his followers also present themselves as defenders of justice. However, the final outcome of such acts will be judged by God. The Bible advises us to maintain sobriety, balance, and self-control, being vigilant and wary, since the adversary, the devil, is always on the prowl, like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. 1 Peter 5, verse 8. The sacred texts characterize demons as diabolical entities, often referred to as impure entities. The book of Revelation tells of the defeat of Satan, described as an immense dragon, and the primordial serpent, responsible for deceiving and misleading the world's population. He is defeated and cast down to earth along with his angelic followers. and the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. Revelation 12, verse 9. These passages underline the need for us to remain vigilant against the plots of evil, seeking spiritual guidance to confront the seductive strategies of Satan and his emissaries. Satan and his demons are known for persecuting Christians and provoking confrontations with heavenly angels. Considering the accounts of Jesus casting out demons earlier in this gospel, the question arises as to why Luke reports an additional exorcism at this particular point. This episode has peculiarities that justify its inclusion and emphasis. Initially, this exorcism stands out because it took place for the first time in non-Jewish territory, located in Geresh, east of the River Jordan, which illustrates the expansion of Jesus' ministry, extending his influence beyond conventional boundaries. Next, this exorcism event stands out for dealing with multiple possessions, marking a more serious episode compared to previous similar situations. In addition, this narrative captures a wider range of reactions to Jesus' miracles, from the locals' request for him to leave to the possessed man's conversion into a popularizer of the Lord's actions. This miracle is part of a sequence of four, each symbolizing a different area of activity, including nature, demonic entities, illness, and death. Finally, this miracle differs in that it involves not only human beings but also animals, the pigs, whose sacrifice underscores the level of utter devastation that is typical of demonic influence. Although demons are non-visible entities, the manifestation of their presence in the pigs underlines the threat they pose. This story provides a deeper and more impactful perspective on the scope and effectiveness of Jesus' ministry, highlighting his mastery over the evil entities that endanger humanity. The detailed account of the individual tormented by demonic spirits emphasizes the destructive capacity of these forces of evil. This man, cut off from social life, lives alone among the tombs without clothes. The story tells how he was restrained several times, either by ropes or chains, but always managed to break them, remaining indomitable. In the Roman Empire, a legion was equivalent to a large group of soldiers. In confronting this spiritual host, Jesus engages in a confrontation of great magnitude, both in terms of numbers and strength. The episode in which Jesus performs a miracle provokes a variety of responses. Evil spirits, even though they recognize Jesus' authority, try to sow disorder among individuals. Knowing that their defeat is inevitable, they try to cause as much damage as possible before their expulsion. At the same time, the local inhabitants ask Jesus to leave the area, showing a fear of the immense power he has revealed. In the end, the individual who has been set free becomes a promoter of Jesus' transforming power. Even with the demons trying to bring about ruin, Jesus' triumph is manifested in the recovery of what was lost. This passage not only shows the struggle between divine and evil forces, but also highlights Jesus' ability to promote healing and freedom, despite the opposition of hostile entities. The restored individual highlights how vulnerable a person can become in the absence of Jesus, particularly when they are trapped by entities stronger than themselves. The radical change in his life clearly demonstrates the contrast experienced by someone who is rescued from this domination. This miraculous act goes beyond the mere casting out of demons. It has a deeper meaning related to the redemption of an imprisoned soul. It is essential to treat the existence of evil and demonic entities with absolute seriousness. Apparently, Jesus chose to perform this miracle to show, both shockingly and explicitly, that evil can lead to death. This event acts as a stark warning about how sin in humanity necessitated the sacrifice of Jesus, offering his own life as redemption. The recovery of the demon-possessed man transcends a mere gesture of authority over evil. It is a clear expression of Jesus' saving love, which breaks the bonds of sin and death to grant full and eternal life. In our society, we often approach the subject of spiritual entities in a superficial way, rather than treating the subject with the seriousness it deserves. Many in modern times find it difficult to come across texts about demons, as these materials challenge us to consider aspects beyond the physical, invisible, and inaudible. However, it is hard to ignore the presence of an evil element in our midst when we look at the terror and destruction present in our culture, as well as the horrific ways in which we can act against each other. Our attempts to fight evil often resemble the efforts of people trying to contain a demonic entity, highlighting the importance of Jesus's saving power. The release of one individual highlights a crucial point and an invitation to reflect. Not everyone is destined to work in ministries that require travel to spread the gospel of Jesus. That is, not everyone is called to serve in missions far from home. On certain occasions, Jesus wants those who have benefited from his grace to tell the people around them about him. The individual who was healed and transformed didn't need to raise funds to find his place of mission. He just needed to share his experience, which he did impressively. In recounting how God had worked in his life, he naturally highlighted Jesus, underlining the power and transformative capacity of the gospel.